Well, hi, this is Dave. Welcome. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Who's here?
This is Emily.
Emily, welcome. Okay, excellent. So you didn't have any trouble logging on and doing all the prep stuff?
No, I just called in.
Well, super, super. I'm going to give it just a minute for the other participants to call in. One of our members is calling from Brazil, so I'm hoping the time calculation is going good. Well, welcome. Have we crossed paths before in terms of
Never.
The... I'm sorry?
No.
Okay. Is there some background noise that you're
hearing? Yeah, I just was on speakerphone, so I turned it off.
Oh, okay,
now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if you can.
Is that better?
It'll work a lot better taking it off speaker because it won't pick up ambient noise. So I'll wait just a minute until the other people sign on to go through the preparatory things. We can go ahead and begin. Tell me a little bit about you and your background and how you came to this training and what you'd like to take away from it.
Okay. So a little bit about my background. I've been teaching yoga and Pilates for the last 16 years. I own my own studio, so I've become pretty successful at running the business.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then I became so busy that I had to expand. So I went out on my own when everyone else told me I shouldn't do it. So I just knew in my heart that I could do it. So I went and got a bigger studio, and that became successful. And then I recently, in the last year, been going through a divorce, and then 2 months later was told I had stage 4 ovarian cancer. So I had to run my business, be a single mom, and I got no child support or any financial support other than, my clients, donating money to me. They kept me, alive this last year. So
wow.
My business saved my life. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, congratulations on your success.
Thanks.
And
then
your resilience.
I'm very resilient, and that's kind of how I started this. Everyone, kept saying, you should go and become a speaker and write a book, and I started writing a book from this teacher met at the Writers Conference in Santa Barbara, and he's like, your story is amazing, and I'm like, well, I'm not a writer, and he's like, yeah, you actually are, and then I turned into, I'm already coaching people, but I don't have a title or anything, so I just want to get training and, feel more confident in, knowing how to help people and actually help myself through all this too,
Okay.
So
what is your
me.
Book about?
What?
What is your book about?
Kind of surviving life, how I've survived. I've had cancer 2 times, my dad's suicide, being emotionally and physically abused, and how that story's been in my head my whole life, and blaming other people. So now I want to change the story and just take ownership and get over that and move forward, and because I have a lot of anger in my head, I can't move on and write the next chapter of my life. And so when I read your email, I was like, oh my God, this is exactly what I've been looking for. I need to change my story.
Interesting. And what would you most like to get out of our collaboration together in this training?
I'd like to get out how to teach people how to go about starting, if I'm meeting with someone, how to go about teaching the train, how do you write the story, or is it you're talking, or just kind of how
right.
a coaching session goes.
Have you had any coach training at this point?
No.
When you said you're coaching people, what is the model or the ideas that you're going on?
Well, I usually lead, I'm leading them through a class, and then I guide them through mind, body, spirit. I'll talk them through a journey, and and then they'll say something. I feel I end up I'm hearing their stories and I talk to them and, already. So I'm trying to not give advice, give solutions without saying, oh, you should do this or do that. I hear a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I'd like to
Well, that sounds great. Congratulations. Yeah. And it'll be, I think you'll find this really beneficial in doing that.
Yeah, and I've been in a lot of therapy my own self. And so, like, I've been learning, like, going through all that, like, you know, you have
okay.
to just kind
yeah,
of.
I've done some training through CTA of yoga masters and yoga teachers and trainers. The entire classes were of the yoga practitioners and teachers. So I think this is something that you're going to particularly enjoy and find really beneficial.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm very, like, when I go into something, I go into, like, 110%. So, if it, you know, it just sounds really interesting to me and challenging. I like a challenge,
so
and I
want to. You want to develop an autonomous coaching practice that parallels your yoga work?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
So I want to take, I have, like, under the umbrella. Like, I'm fitness, wellness, coaching. Like, my name's Empower. Like, empower your life, empower your journey.
Okay.
And then coach them along the way. So maybe it'd be divorced, your business fails, or you have cancer, anything like that. Like, you can change the story, you know, and how to teach them how to start doing that instead of being so negative and, like, I can't do this and my life sucks. Like, you know, be positive. But actually have, like, them do work, you know, not just say, oh, change your life, you know, how to teach them how to do it.
That sounds great. Okay, well, thanks. Excellent.
Yeah.
Has Robin arrived? Has Paola arrived?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Great. Would you give us just a brief summary of your journey to this class, what your experiences have been, and what you want to get out of this class?
Well, I want to help people, you know, because
I ask, are you on a speakerphone?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but there's kind of an echo. Are you on a speakerphone?
Well, no, I'm just speaking direct to the computer. I have an iMac, and I'm just speaking direct to it.
Okay, you don't have an option of a regular landline?
Telephone landline?
Right.
Yes, I do, but is there a special line? Because if I call from Brazil, it's very expensive to be for
I
so
see.
Long.
Okay, well, let's go with this then. It's just kind of like an echo, but I can still hear, we can still hear you. So go ahead. Thanks.
So I will speak slowly and
understand
me. I'm not a native speaker, and I hope you can understand my accent.
You're great.
Thank you.
English is my second language. Texas is my first language, so you're doing great.
Thank you. So I sent you my message about my bio, and I've been a coach for over 10 years. And I love to help people. I love to help people make their dreams come true. And many of my clients, they really need to write a new life story. So I want to learn how to work with people with this powerful tool, I believe it is.
What kind of coach training have you had?
A life coach.
And was that in Brazil?
In Brazil, yes.
Okay.
What kind of coaching
practice do you have?
Couples that try to divorce and then they could be together again. People that are changing their life from one profession to another.
Okay.
And this kind of not a special niche, you know.
Uh-huh.
People come to me, I help them to organize their lives.
Got it. And what particularly would you like out of our collaboration together?
Well, as far as I understand, the proposal of your work is to help people build new connections in their brain and rewrite new stories for their lives.
Okay.
Am I correct?
Yes.
So this is the number one reason I'm here.
Okay. Well, that sounds great. I think this will be a very useful application to what you do and really enhance your practice and your effectiveness. So,
I don't know if you had time to read my bio. Did you?
I have not read your bio yet. I was out of the office for much of the day, but I will. And I think I have two of the three bios. I need one more bio, and then I'm going to send around the bios to each of you so that you'll have some background. Now, I know that each of you registered within the last week, and I sent some beginning PDF of the curriculum so that you'll have it and not get behind. And I think each of you have ordered the hard copy of the curriculum. You need to order that separately from the registration at Coach Training Alliance. But I sent, as an attachment, the first couple of weeks of reading so that you won't get behind. Okay?
Thank you. Okay. I got the files that you sent, but I didn't get the site from which I can order the hard copy of this.
You didn't? Okay, I will, let me send you a link for that. Okay, I'll make a note of that. That should have been in the registration material, but it may have slipped. So I'll send you that link, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Has Robin arrived? Okay, I'm not sure what's happened. Well, let me do some introductory material, just kind of introduce you to this. I'm very excited to work with each of you in this training series. And in this first session, I want to do just a brief overview of the training course and curriculum. And mostly address the power of story. And story is the metaphor to organize the coaching philosophy and system we'll talk about over the next several weeks. So in each of the 12 sessions, I'll supplement the curriculum. And you'll see one of the things you downloaded in addition to outline was the syllabus that has the reading in the curriculum that corresponds to each of the 12 seminars. So keep a copy of that, because in addition, during these times that we'll meet for 75 minutes for 12 weeks, we're going to talk about explanations of how to use the system, coaching applications, additional material and research, and case studies. And I want to reserve the initial time and the end time to discuss cases or vignettes you'd like us to collaborate about in your coaching practice, to look at applications or questions that you have, and to discuss some of the material, both in the curriculum and that we go over. And there will be about 40 minutes or so in the middle that I will present that will expand and elaborate on the curriculum. I won't reiterate the curriculum whatsoever, but I want to apply and expand it and give illustrations from cases so that you really get a feel for how to work with this material. So I want to mention a couple of bonuses. At the end of this training, I'm going to have my fulfillment house mail you a hard copy of Live a New Life Story, the workbook. And this is the workbook that you can use with clients. You can use either a hard copy or a PDF that can be customized with your name on the cover, co-branded, and a new first page for your message, your contact information, that sort of thing. After I complete a revision that I'm doing now, I'll send you a copy of the book Outsmart Your Brain, an Instruction Manual. We'll also have quarterly mentor groups for the graduates. In fact, we had one today. It's the first Monday every 3 months, and today is the first Monday. And I send around a white paper as part of that mentor group. And the entire engagement with what we do. What I do is work very much to support your practices, your referral base, and that sort of thing. The number of things that I do include the quarterly mentor group, where we look at best practices, success stories, that sort of thing, a white paper for continuing education, to make available any of the workbooks that you would like to work with in PDF that are co-branded. And I'll go over all this, and I'll send you a letter about this at the end of the training. I don't want you to have to worry about trying to remember it all. I just want to give you an idea of some of the things that I do. Some of the things that are part of what we do here, so that all the things that I mention are ones that will support your practice. There are some other things that I have in mind that will be beneficial for you for getting clients, some material that you can use, I think, that will be beneficial. And past the training, beginning at the end of the training, to maintain the license fee is like $45 a quarter. So we'll go over all of that. So now what I want to do is to give you an idea and introduce the concept of story, because that's what our work will be based on, and it's the best way that I can integrate psychology and neuroscience with strategic coaching to have a maximum effectiveness. And what you'll see in the curriculum, and it will spend the first four out of the first five seminars on the ROADMAP system. The ROADMAP is the acronym, the seven steps to deconstruct a story, whether that's a life story, wellness, money, relationship, career story, and specifically how to revise it or construct a new one. And this is where the principles of the mind and brain sciences applied to strategic coaching will come into play. And I think you'll see the power that has and the effectiveness that it will put you in a place that will be far and above the experience and the training of other coaches when you mm-hmm. have the mind and brain sciences in your understanding and in a working concept. So any questions at this point or any clarifications?
Nope.
Okay. You'll see also at the place you were directed to download the outline and the syllabus, there's a 28-week protocol. That's something that is something that you can use if you're interested. A number of people have used it with groups to have a certain assignment from the client workbook that corresponds to each week in the group, or could be individual, that offers a guided and stepwise way to go through the material and to have this material be supportive and supplemental to the work that you do. And, of course, that 28 weeks can be expanded or contracted based on the needs of client.
I didn't see that. Where was that?
That was a link that you can download. The page you were directed to that had the welcome and the number that you call, it has a number of things at that page. A link to click to print out, to download and print out the outline, the syllabus, and the 28-week protocol. And that page also is where the recordings will be for each of these 12 seminars. So within a day or so, it will take the CDA IT guy about a day to get these recordings up, but they'll be posted for online playback. The one thing I want to mention, I will send you an example of this. The only thing that's required for completion, for certification, for licensure, in addition to attendance and participation, is a case write-up using the roadmap system. I will send you two things. One is an example of a write-up, and the other is a link for an ebook that will be no cost to you of a number of cases that have been written up using 32, actually, from 32 different previous graduates of this course, who have written up cases using the roadmap system. And I think it'll give you a good idea of the power and the scope of the roadmap system. So I'll send you the link to that book as well as an attachment of an example of how to write it up. And in the latter part of our 12 weeks, we'll spend about 15 minutes at the beginning of three of the seminars to have each of you present your roadmap case study. This can be on yourself. A number of them have been in the past. A number in the book or what the coach did on himself or herself. Or it can be with a client.
Okay. I have a quick question. I'm looking at the email you said where you download the two attachments where it has the introduction and the life story. I don't see anywhere where that 28-page.
This would be when you registered, when CTA sent you the link from CTA, the auto.
Okay, sponsor, I'll look for that. Okay.
There are links to the outline, 28-week protocol, and
if you find it,
it will all be there, and the ports for the 12 seminars.
Okay, thanks.
So you'll see in the curriculum that each module is a complete unit as well as being a component of the 10-part series. For some of the modules, such as the ones on money, career, relationship stories, wellness stories, they can be used as a template for mentoring, for seminars, for groups, or coaching packages. The first three modules are the 7 steps to live a new life story, the roadmap, the acronym. And this can be something that I think will be beneficial, and why we're going to spend more time proportionally on this is it's really the foundation of the understanding. And in the first 5 sessions, you'll hear me talk a bit more than in the subsequent sessions and presenting more material than the curriculum we have. I want to be sure you have a solid, informed foundation to build applications. Oh, one other thing is you'll have a registry, the listing of all graduate, specially certified, licensed New Life Story coaches, a registry with your name, your picture, your specialty, contact information, and this is to support your practices and exposure and referrals for individual and for corporate referral. So that's something, too, that will be one of the things that I do to boost your practices. Okay, before we move into the material, any other thoughts or questions or things that would be helpful to talk about? Let me check one more time. Has Robin arrived? Okay. Well, I'm going to, for the lecture portion, I'm going to keep an open line so that you can interrupt or clarify if there's anything you want to talk about or so that we can discuss. I'll save some time for discussion at the end. So what I'd like you to do is manage the background noise. If there is any background noise, you can always mute. If you don't have a headset with a toggle switch, you can mute by doing *6 or on a computer. I'm not sure what system you're using, but I'm not sure what mute is there, but just to manage the background noise. So a prologue to our work. In the first session, I want to talk about the power of story and the concept of writing a new story. And the remaining seminars, we're going to look at how to do that, at the principles and practice of change, beginning with the 7-step roadmap process to create a new story. We're going to talk about your life story. I encourage you to do the exercises and work pages in the workbook yourself. And you'll see in the curriculum, the workbook is in gray. Now, the part in gray is the workbook segment. That will be separated and will be the workbook that you can work with clients with. It's a separate piece of material, but it's something you can work with clients. But I put it in the curriculum so that you'll be aware of suggested use and how it corresponds to what you're learning. So I want to encourage you to actively listen and understand your own story to apply the process. When you've done it yourself, you're in the best position to coach it. When you've made your own journey, you can best guide the client's journey. From a Chinese proverb, I hear and I forget, I see and I remember, I do and I understand. And from Columbia University, we remember 2% of what we hear, 25% of what we see, and 90% of what we do. So my recommendation, put it into action. I suggest right now for you to write this question down and perhaps schedule a brainstorming session with yourself, an appointment with yourself for at least 10 or 15 minutes to really think about this question. And here's the question. What is my story? Think about your story. It makes you who you are. Summarize your plot in one sentence. Bullet your major storylines. Now, this is not your bio, your title, your role. It's your story. One of the things you bring as professional coaches that's unique, you're experts at change, choice architects. You facilitate and guide a client's life or wellness story. As we go through the seminars, think about your professional story. Work on how to convey your unique offering in a clear, brief, simple way that focuses on client benefits. At a meeting not too long ago, I heard David Plouffe began by saying, be able to answer every crucial question in one sentence. And Einstein said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. And these are basically the four rules of good writing, which are the four rules of good speaking. And this is from William Zinsser, the Art of Writing. Clarity, brevity, simplicity, and humanity. So here are some premises that our work together will be based on. One, plot is the structure, purpose, and pattern of a story. For a life story, it's the outline of life narratives. The core assumptions of life stories inform what we look for and then how we attribute meaning to what we see and experience. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded especially from parents in the first years of life become automatic to operate without observation or awareness. In fact, neuroscientists estimate that about 95% of our behaviors and core beliefs are pre-programmed in the unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. We rarely ever observe these behavior patterns and beliefs because they're unconscious. Then what we do is to create two stories simultaneously. The surface story that we run our lives with, which is, remember, about 5%, conscious intentions and aspirations. And this includes, this is what I want from life. This is what I plan. These are my aspirations. The unconscious story that ghostwrites behaviors at times can go in a different direction. When your life and actions don't meet your positive aspirations, this dialogue can include, well, I can't get what I want, or the system keeps me from getting what I need, or I don't have what it takes. Here's a not uncommon example of that. The surface story is, I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story, though, may be, well, I don't think I really have what it takes, or, you know, I think it would take so much work and so much effort, and I'm not sure that I could succeed. I think I'm happy just staying with where I am. So at times, as you see, the surface story and the shadow story can go in opposite directions, and someone is stuck. Two, we learn through stories. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. James Watson, the guy who discovered DNA with Crick, said, you know, I can remember something when I fit it into a story. A story is a system for holding together facts. A story makes things make sense. Muriel Rukeyser said, the world is made up of stories, not atoms. We personify the economy or the stock market as if each were a story of its own. Well, the stock market reluctantly gave back some gains today. The market is resisting the new news. We make a story out of events in order to infer relationship and assign causality. Three, the third premise. We each have a personal story with a plot and storylines. Our beliefs and assumptions ghostwrite that story. From an infinite sea of possibilities, our software determines what we perceive and process. The brain needs a story. It will infer one, so it's helpful to know the lexicon. Our plot consists of our core beliefs and assumptions that transform all available information into a system that makes sense. We then create life narratives according to plot, since mind and brain are both programmed to process by the default mode and to ignore facts that contradict assumptions. Now, one of the reasons I mentioned about the outline is you each have an annotated outline, so you don't have to take notes frantically when I'm talking. Basically, everything that I'm talking about is in that outline. So that would be a benefit, if you haven't already, to printing the outline so you can follow and kind of just listen and see if it makes sense to you and apply it and that sort of thing. Four, a life story contains silent assumptions and emotional scripts. Our assumptions tell us what to look for and then how to perceive and how to process experiences. Some of our beliefs and patterns may be invisible even to ourselves. For example, Gregory Maguire, the best-selling novelist and playwright, most recently the Broadway hit Wicked, said, I didn't even realize this at first, but there's almost no central character in any of my 24 books who doesn't have a dead mother or a lost parent. Maguire's mother died from complications during his birth. After his 23rd book, he became conscious for the first time of the fact that, as he put it, I can't seem to start a novel unless the character doesn't have a mother. If the mother's still alive, if the mother's still there, what's the problem? There's nothing to write about. Five, we believe and remember only that which fits our plot. What we expect to happen in the present reveals instantly our experience in the past. Psychoanalysts call this transference. Someone abandoned early in life will expect more of the same in future relationships, most likely, even though circumstances have changed dramatically. All subsequent information is processed, absorbed, filtered, and organized by the narrative plot. Our expectations help us see, in fact, determine what we see, but they may blind us to other things that we're not looking for. Here's an example. A professor who's fond of telling stories will ask his class, close to the end of the class, if they have time for him to tell them a story before they leave. They look at their watches and inevitably say yes. Then he immediately asks them what time it is. They have to look at their watches again. Now, this is really understandable because their frame of reference for the initial checking of their watches was to see how much time remained, not what time it was. So the first time, they checked to see if there was enough time left before the class ended. If we look for one thing, we may miss another. Six, we don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. We see what we believe, and we always end up being right because we write the story. Here's an example. This is out of Oxford, a number of years ago. Two anthropologists were chosen to enter separate, essentially identical ape colonies to live and to observe for a year. They had remarkable similarities of personality, philosophy, training, and education. The two anthropologists lived for a year, didn't communicate with each other, and then emerged to compare notes. They expected essential similarities, but instead found remarkable discrepancies. One anthropologist, after an initial period of transition, was accepted by the apes. He was integrated into the colony and achieved a unity and comfort with the apes. The other anthropologist never got beyond the social periphery of his colony. He remained careful and vigilant, always seemed right on the cusp of a conflict, never achieved that harmony and unity. The two anthropologists could not understand their discrepant results or find any reasons. They and their teams puzzled for months until finally they found one difference. The anthropologist, who was the uncomfortable, careful outsider, carried a gun. Now, his gun never showed. He never used it. The apes never knew he had it, but he knew he had it. He knew if things got tough, he had an out. The anthropologist who had no gun had a commitment. He knew from the beginning that he would either make it or not on his own. So in retrospect and reconstruction, each of their assumptions created the reality that they experienced. We tell our story, then our story tells us. 7, a story can define possibility. And you guys know this story. In centuries of recorded time, no one ran the mile in under 4 minutes. It was impossible. Dr. Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile in 1954. Within the following 18 months, a dozen other runners broke the 4-minute mile as well. The obstacle of the impossible could no longer be constructed. Today, this is commonplace. When the mindset of what's possible changes, reality then changes as well. 8, a story can define reality. A placebo generates the effect of the accompanying story. A patient is prescribed an inert pill plus some expectations, in other words, a story. In the vast majority of cases, the story becomes the reality. By anticipating an experience, you can create it. In fact, the story generates a truth so powerful, it can even reverse the pharmacological effect of a real medicine. The placebo is a white lie. It's a fiction that becomes a truth. In fact, a recent MIT study showed that a more expensive placebo worked significantly better than a much cheaper one. Same placebo, different stories. And this isn't about being gullible or suggestible. For example, when a patient believes something will reduce pain, the body releases endorphins. And medical research suggests that over 70% of successful non-surgical treatments are the result of the patient's belief that the treatment will work. And this, of course, comes directly from the physician's belief about whether it will work or not. 9, a story can take over the author. Listen to these expressions. My anger took over. My fear stopped me. A feeling that someone creates is perceived to act on its creator. Here are some ways that we can see ourselves as the victims of the stories that we create rather than the author. My doubt paralyzed me. My work eroded my free time. My weight gets in the way. We ascribe a story with a mind of its own to our own creations. In other words, the feeling or the experience we create, we then see that feeling to make us its victim rather than seeing ourselves as the author of the experience. Here's another example of the power of story. A woman I know who recalled an incident many decades ago from her adolescence. She attended a Catholic all-girls boarding school. She said, "At one party, I started a rumor that the punch was spiked. and everybody got drunk. 10. Your life is the self-statement, the manifestation of what exists inside you. What people say and do are inevitable, unavoidable self-statements of their beliefs and personal reality. All that you say and do is about yourself. What you say about me tells me about you. Everyone is always making self-statements, but the important thing is not to take it personally. When you get the curriculum, in the back is a glossary of some of the commonly used terms, and one of the entries there is self-statement. You can read more about it and look at a further explanation when you get that. You define yourself. Other people's definitions of you are more about them, to make themselves feel better, what they want or don't want to own, what they disavow or what they project. So the principle here in coaching is a client is always showing you exactly what it's like to be him or her. So if you think about it in that way, I believe it's more helpful as a way of discerning information rather than seeing it as resistance or thinking the client is trying to do something to you or oppose you. I think it can help you understand more about how to engage. We'll come back to that. 11, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. Neuroscience shows that pure facts are a myth. Quantum physics seconds the motion. This observation came originally from quantum physics and the process of observing quarks. 11, an authentic belief in someone activates their brain to create a state of mind that transcends usual thinking and performance. Think about this. This is a recent discovery in neuroscience. And this is why I believe that the most important thing that we can do for a client as a mentor coach is to believe in that client. And that's why I work only with clients in whom I believe. An authentic belief in someone activates their brain to create a state of mind for them that transcends their usual thinking and performance. Now, good parents have known this for centuries, but sometimes it takes validation by neuroscience research to really point it out. Now, One of the themes that I've raised many points here and themes that we're going to return to and develop and weave together throughout this experience. So I want to focus for just a moment on why change is so hard. Why do we resist change? Even changing a story. Let me ask if you have a cough, if you would mute because it picks up and the recording will pick up your cough. So just mute, and you can come back and be sure and unmute when you're ready for discussion. So why do we resist change, even changing a story that doesn't work? What keeps people from doing what they know they need to do for themselves? Why will someone repeat behavior that doesn't work, often do it harder, and expect a different result? It's like someone who, you know, doesn't understand a foreign language, you repeat it louder as if louder is going to help, even when it leads to lower energy, debt, plateaued career, or disappointing relationship. Nassim Taleb asks in The Black Swan, what are our minds made for? It looks like we have the wrong user's manual. So part of the answer to why we resist change is in our minds. And I think both of these components are helpful to really recognize as mentor coaches, because we're going to work with them on a daily basis. We repeat the same story because it's our comfort zone. It's secure and predictable. A comfort zone may be limiting or uncomfortable, but it's familiar. It's the default model. We repeat because we know how it's going to turn out, and that can create the illusion of effectiveness. A new story, on the other hand, generates uncertainty, trepidation. The easiest and fastest way to end this discomfort is to go back to the old story, they're familiar. People fail to change because they don't feel safe changing. Changing means leaving their home base of reality, the internal map that's synonymous with identity. We tend to return to our default mode. Let's do a brief exercise with me, if you would. If you can get your both of your hands free, put your palms together in front of your face and firmly together, and then firmly interlock your thumbs and fingers. Now, with your hands firmly clasped, notice which thumb is on top. Now, keep your fingers exactly the same and change so that the other thumb is on top. So how does that feel? Kind of awkward, kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, move your thumbs back to the original place. Ah, kind of a relief. That's why people don't change. They return to their comfort zone. Now, up the ante, add significant success or significant stress, such as a major transition, really out of a comfort zone. We're going to talk more about comfort zones and how to program change. There is always the pull of the old and the fear of the new. And the other part of the answer, the why change is difficult, is in our brains. The hypnotherapist Milton Erickson told a story from his childhood in which whenever it snowed, he would be the first to get up and go to school so that he could create a fresh path in the snow. He intentionally created a circuitous path, zigzags and indirect turns. He noticed that each person who followed him followed the same path. Until the end of the day, the path was really well-worn despite its really circuitous route. Not a single person started a new, more direct route. And subsequently, when he did this, adding more twists and turns, each person in turn followed the path of least resistance. Not a single person created a new path. This is how neural pathways are laid down in the brain. By early experiences, then repeated until they're etched more deeply, even if they don't work as well, even if they're circuitous routes. So to think creatively, new neural pathways need to be developed outside the cycle of usual experience. Stimulation for a new insight is a circumstance where the brain can't predict what will happen next. The catalyst for insight is a novel stimulus, new information, or a new context. And that's what we're experts at, helping someone self-reflect and look at things in a different way. So we're going to talk about this juncture in particular, when your mind and brain both react to leaving the familiar and engaging new behavior, the newness, the uncertainty, at that point can be read as evidence not to proceed, as intuition of a wrong choice. The discomfort can be read as my gut's telling me this is not right, or as a signpost of change and progress. So this is where we have to actively help a client not only in empathic resonance with their discomfort in moving ahead, but also to help them revise and transform the model that they're operating on so that they can read the discomfort or the uncertainty of doing something new as evidence of moving ahead, as validation of being in new territory, rather than anxiety equals danger, as in an old model, better head for cover. So discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. In fact, our brains even have an error detection mechanism located very close to the emotional center when we try something new that says this isn't normal. We're going to talk about how to use this mechanism as part of a powerful internal navigation system. Now, not only do we actively construct stories, but our brain continually edits at the same time. An example is a classic study, some of you have probably seen this, in which an audience is asked to watch several people dribbling and passing a basketball among themselves. Their job to count the number of passes each person makes during a one-minute period. Intense concentration is needed because the ball moves quickly. Then, someone dressed in a gorilla suit crosses the floor, walks through the players, turns to the viewer in the middle of the screen, and thumps his chest, and then leaves. How many people saw such an obvious happening? Researchers Daniel Simons and Christopher Chabris found that consistently just over 50% of people failed to notice the gorilla. This inattentional blindness is our brain at work trying to construct meaningful and consistent narratives from an inconsistent world. Their subsequent book on this study and this whole phenomenon is called The Invisible Gorilla. Things that don't fit the storyline get unconsciously edited or simply fail to register as relevant. So, listen for the power of story. Your brain can rewire. New experiences, practiced consistently, form new neural pathways and new neural networks. And some remarkable new research shows both beliefs as well as repeating new experiences can both alter gene expression. So when we write a new story and change our minds, we change our brains. Metaphors and narratives become brain structures. Also from the Black Swan, ideas come and go, stories stay. To talk for a moment about active choice, one of the principles we'll be using as mentor coaches, I'm going to describe a study and have you guess the biggest change impact. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the United Kingdom devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects chose a different option from polls of contrasting behaviors, lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive, and behaved according to this assignment. So an introverted person, for example, would act as an extrovert for an entire day. Someone would choose to talk about sports or talk about business. They would make a choice and act that way for the entire day. Additionally, twice a week, they would stretch to behave in a way outside their usual patterns. Twice a week, they would eat something they had never eaten before, and twice a week, they would read something that they had never read before. So, after 4 months of doing this, what was the biggest change that you think that the group experienced? Any guesses? Any wild guesses?
They changed.
Say it again.
They changed.
Well, they did. And here's the finding. After 4 months, the subjects lost an average of 11 pounds. 6 months later, they had all kept the weight off. Most continued to lose weight. Now, this puzzled them initially because this wasn't a diet. It was a study focusing on change and its impact. The rationale, requiring people to change routine behaviors make them actually think about decisions rather than habitually choosing a default mode without consideration. In other words, they would recognize that everything they did was a choice. It didn't exist until they chose to do it. Even to the point of eating, they recognized that every bite is a choice. So they began to ask, is this bite in my best interest? Now, in coaching, I call this story busting. When the participants processed decisions actively and recognized that they not only owned their story, but it wasn't there until they created it, they then recognized that it was their choice to write exactly the story that they wanted. This process of conscious decision extended to other choices, what to eat, what not to. So, as coaches, we are choice architects to help a client be aware that a choice right now for this moment is the story that he or she is writing. It's not there until it's created. So, once becoming aware of actively making choices, you can decide what's in your best interest, what furthers your story, and what doesn't. If you want to understand something, try to change it. Now, here's an example that I want to give from executive mentor coaching and a client of mine that I worked with, a client I'll call Brian. Brian was working successfully at a new CEO position. 3 months earlier, he advanced from COO at another corporation, and he was doing a great job in his first 100 days. One session, he departed from our discussion of success strategies to say that he had a fear that he would somehow sabotage his new achievements. Then he said he regularly stopped at a convenience store to eat candy before he got home so that his wife wouldn't see him. I asked how he decided to stop each time. He responded by calling it sneak eating and said that he hadn't told his wife. Now, which really didn't answer my question. And this is one of the things we want to be sure we listen for when we ask a client a simple, specific question and wait for the answer is, are they really answering the question? And I ask, what do you say to yourself the instant you decide to sneak eat? Well, he wasn't sure. And I wanted specifically to know the conversation he was having with himself that led to his conclusion to get the candy, because he said he hadn't thought about it. Well, an impulse fuses urge with action to collapse that contemptible space where reason resides. There was no place for contemplation of what's in my best interest. So I prompted him. I pushed here. I said, in other words, the instant before you decide to stop and get something to eat, do you bargain with yourself to say, I'll do better later, or I'll start not doing it next week? Or do you oppose your own authority to say, the hell with it, I'll do whatever I want? Or do you feel some overwhelming urge that hijacks your best judgment? Well, he recognized after he reflected on his internal conversation that he usually said, to hell with it, I'm going to eat whatever I want. Nobody's around to stop me. So he recognized the result was to abandon his own principles. And I noted that in the story he was writing, it was as if he farmed out his authority to his wife, as if she were the obstacle. He kept the other half, the desire, as if he were getting away with something. He created the illusion that he triumphed because his wife didn't see him and didn't know about it. Now, we had talked about his stress about being a more ultimate authority now than ever before in his life, his first CEO position. He acknowledged that this choice was to not be his own authority, to get the candy every day. His question was, well, how do I get it back? How do I get my authority back? And I said, well, the question is not how do you get it back, but how do you not give it away? It's yours. You're the author of your story. And then I added, it sounds like you're not being loyal to yourself. And he immediately recognized that he was writing a storyline he detested. And he had a push and a pull, and he was assigning one part of it to his wife and keeping the other part. And I asked him how he could convert his fear into an intention that was in his best interest. And we then talked about how he could align himself with his needs and his ideals and deal with things that were in his best interest to have effective strategies for eating and exercise and expand this to success in his company as well. Now, here are some principles. I want to conclude and then have some time for discussion. Here are some principles that focus on facilitating change. And these principles are a preface to looking at Live a New Life Story or any of the particular stories that we're going to look at, career, wellness, money, relationship. One, each person's life story is created. In adulthood, you create whatever you think, feel, and experience each moment. Every day is a blank page until you begin writing on it, even though it may seem to be just the way things are. Two, knowing what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. And you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. 3, when people create their own answers, they've signed on to invest in the outcome. This establishes the beginning of a sense of effectiveness and mastery. The antithesis is somebody tells you what to do. Now, that's why we begin each coaching session with asking the client what he or she wants to focus on in that session, so that in the beginning, the client takes ownership of that session and to circumscribe it into something that is specific and manageable in the time frame that the client has. So if it's something like that's too vague or too abstract, like, well, I want to be happy, or, well, I want to change my career, we help them focus on something that is what we can together focus on in this unit of time. And then secondly, to ask them, what would you like to take away from this session? Because that helps the client by creating a success map so that both of you know exactly what you're going to be focusing on. That's determined by the client. The client takes ownership of the story of that session. And the client has determined the successful endpoint so that you both are collaborating to look at and understand that aspect and to get to what the client wants to take away. 4, we don't see things as they are, we see things as we are. Assumptions manifest as feelings and behaviors. When you make assumptions explicit, you can more clearly see which facilitate and which interfere. 5, change is constant and inevitable. It's the resistance to change that creates most problems. And when someone recognizes a concern about change, it's already begun. 6, small changes lead to big changes. Issues that seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue in order to specify progress. For example, a common example, you feel overwhelmed with the amount of tasks, you shrink the change to first clarify one issue that if done today would be progress, that you can get traction and feel effectiveness. The focus on a specific action exercises effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. 7, problems, causes, and solutions are not always related or even interconnected. To resolve a problem, even emotionally, to come to the end of the past does not create a blueprint for success. That's why there are a lot of frustrated therapy refugees. Strategic plans for specific goals are necessary. If something's a totally new experience, you may need a guide, even for something like a healthier diet or exercise. 8, the benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't will become evident and self-perpetuating. And that's a really simple way of stating what we help someone do in mentor coaching. If it's working, do more of it. If it's not working, do something different. 9, you need to know where you're going, goals and strategies. Setting a goal will enhance motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. If you don't know where you're going, any map will do. The end should be in mind from the beginning. Lewis Carroll said it well. Alice came to a fork in the road. Which road do I take? She asked. Where do you want to go? Responded the Cheshire Cat. I don't know, Alice answered. Then said the cat, it doesn't matter. 10, you need the correct paradigm. A paradigm is an internal map, the way you see, interpret, and understand something. It needs to be correct and applicable to the situation. If you're in Dallas and need to navigate the city, a map of Houston is useless no matter how hard you try. And it has to be current, not a paradigm from an old story. And you'll see that again and again with clients. 11, decide what you want, believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception, just like the filter on a camera alters the image that gets recorded by the camera. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or off. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. Here's one example, and I want to close with this brief story and then have some time for discussion. One example of a belief coupled with a goal. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. She couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to do it. She decides to write. As soon as she starts writing, her mother dies at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ends in a divorce. She has a miscarriage. She gets fired from her job and has to live on government welfare. She takes her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and writes on a legal pad while her baby takes a nap. She does this every day for 4 years. And then, after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. Now, thoughts, questions, clarifications about anything that we've talked about? Does this make sense to you, or are there some clarifications that would be helpful for us to address?
It makes sense. I follow you on the...
Would you start over? It was a little staccato at the beginning. I didn't quite make out what you were saying. Would you start over?
It makes sense. I was trying to follow you on the line, like the number one, two. I didn't see, like, is that numbered in the outline, or are you just making up numbers as you were going?
This is all in the outline. Do you have a copy of the outline in front of you?
I have the one that says Module 1, Story and Story Assessment.
It's an outline. It's like a 20-something page outline of all 12 seminars that's in outline form. And it's numbered. They correspond with my numbers and everything. Everything fits. Do you have that?
Is it the owner's guide?
No. It's the outline of the seminar outline.
No, I guess I don't. But I
okay,
find it.
Go back to that page you were directed to and print out the outline because it's there. It's an annotated outline. It's in great detail. It's 20-something pages. It's of each of the 12 seminars, and I think it'll be helpful for you and help you kind of listen and not have to do a bunch of writing.
That'd be nice. Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Other thoughts or questions?
When you said that the star takes over the writer, when can we get hold of the story ourselves instead of having the story taking over us as writers?
Well, this is what the roadmap system is about. And the seven steps are about how to listen first to our own stories. And the first steps, and we'll spend some time on each of these, to recognize authorship of our own story. And we think that we do. I mean, we obviously acknowledge that we're creating our own story, but there are things that may be subtle, that may be blind spots, that may be beliefs that we're not aware of, that are unconscious. There may be attachment patterns, for example, that we're not aware of. So the first step is to recognize authorship of our story and then to own it, in order to assess what to change and decide what to change. Those are the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, own, assess, and decide what to change. And that's why we're going to spend some significant time, the next four seminars, on the seven steps of the roadmap to really understand that, because I think it will help you immensely in listening to a client's story and get to the point where there's nothing that doesn't make sense about what you're hearing about a client and their story and how to collaborate with them about how to go about revising that and helping the client create a new story. You will not be ghostwriting that story or directing a client how to do it, but being a catalyst for them to create their own story. Now, each of you know, and you know this in different ways, that just providing information is not enough. If information were enough, we'd all be thin, we'd eat vegetables every day, we'd work out every day, we'd have a lot of money saved up for the future, and there would be a lot of librarians who would be billionaires. But information is not enough, and that's why I emphasize the process of understanding why change is difficult so that we can really empathically understand from a client's point of view how puzzling and how difficult change seems to them so that we can help them and co-create and collaborate about change with them. And this is the fundamental premise of working as a mentor coach, is that we collaborate with a client in creating a new story. We're not a consultant to fix the problem. We're not going to ghostwrite their story for them. We're going to help them understand how to create a better story themselves. Now, we can provide information and do a lot of things that will help them write their own story. Does that make sense now, a little bit more? Okay, well, thanks. Thanks for clarifying that. Other thoughts or questions? Or other aspects you'd like to talk a little bit more about? We still have 2 or 3 minutes.
And when you said that sometimes our mind goes one way and the subconscious goes another way, how can we align this to go just one direction together?
Well, let me clarify that. An example, I believe, of what you're asking is where there's a surface story of this is what I want, and then a shadow story that opposes that we want to stay with what we have and not tolerate risk or uncertainty or anxiety. So what we do then is to make both the surface story, which is already conscious, and the shadow story conscious as well, so that someone can then make an accurate and informed choice about how to proceed and to create goals and strategies so that someone's needs and ideals are aligned with their goals and strategies so that all of them can go in the same direction.
Okay.
And we'll talk about that a bit more next time when we look at recognizing, owning, and assessing someone's story. So that's a good question. Hold on to that. We're going to elaborate about that more the next time, because that's a fundamental question that is so very important, and it's so much of what we do on a regular basis with clients.
So you call that surface story, and the other part is?
Say it again, please.
Surface story is one story, and the other part that goes against it is the ghost story.
I'm not quite clear what you're asking. Are you referring to what I said about the surface story and the shadow story?
And the shadow story, yes.
Yeah, the shadow story is the one that's not altogether conscious or logical or intellectual, but yet it can continue to drive behavior.
Okay.
So we want to make that shadow story conscious. And there's some aspects, there are fundamental aspects that we'll talk about in terms of how to do that and how to understand that in terms of our basic motivation of seeking pleasure and avoiding pain, and how we can make that conscious as well as part of what we do with coaches. So basically, the framework of the focus of our work as coaches is on the choice architecture of this moment. Not about the past, understanding or working through the past, but about choices of this moment.
And could the shadow story be also like the negative voice in your head that's trying to tell you a different story? Is that?
Yes, that's a good example of that, yeah.
Okay.
And you are also the author of that voice as well. So when you recognize that you author both the positive forward story and the negative voice that stops you in your tracks, you are author of both of those. But yet they're conflicting so that you feel stuck.
Right, right.
So
okay, so your choice to make it conscious so you can change. Okay, yeah.
There's a strategic way to go about that and understand how to proceed with that and align needs and ideals with goals and strategies to move
okay.
ahead in a systematic way. And that's something that we'll be talking about in terms of the roadmap.
Cool.
So, thank you all very much. We're off and running. I look forward to our collaboration, and we'll pick up right here next time. Thanks very, very much.
Okay.
Bye now.
Next
Monday?
What?
Our next meeting is next Monday?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. You'll let
I'm going to ask the same thing.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.